Well, all right, good morning.
You better ask everybody if they've got dolls.
All right, so there's a little confusion on the notes. You should have, I think, pages 61 through 67 in your notes. The last page should be blank on the back side of it. That should be what you're at. So just want to make sure everybody got them. So what happens is if somebody doesn't grab the whole pile, then the next person gets thrown off, and the next person. So, oh, it was you? All right, you're the guy. All right, so. The reason we're meeting in here today is not because there's so many decorations over there. It's actually because we're having a little trouble with the computer that runs the sound system for recording. And so that's why we're over here today. Hopefully have that fixed in the near future. And just by way also that if somebody ends up listening to this online the last couple of weeks, we may not have everything on there, so because we lost some parts of the recording. Today we're in the book of Galatians. We're in the book of Galatians, and I just realized I need to grab myself my Bible, which is up here. We'll be in Galatians, and we're going to, God willing, touch on Ephesians as well together as we continue in our study of New Testament survey. And again, survey classes can seem a little tedious at times, but they have great importance, sort of like if you start a new job and you have your first day orientation. You go through all of those meetings and videos that they show you. Sometimes they feel like a waste of time, but actually a lot of times they answer important questions that you need to know later on. Surveys kind of like that. New Testament introduction is kind of like that. It has some importance to it to help us answer questions later on. So we're in Galatians this morning. And as we think about Galatians, let's just talk a little bit about the background of the book to help you understand it, study it. I'll just say on a personal note, Galatians is one of my favorite books in the New Testament. It was taught to me in college. I was 19 years old, sophomore in college. A gentleman by the name of Dave Saxon, taught through the book of Galatians as a college class at Maranatha Baptist University. And Dr. Saxon was the first person who when I was really thirsting to know God's word well, I look back and realize that my dad could have done this as well, but as a young high schooler, didn't have the same amount of thirst as I did then. But he introduced me to Paul. Like, when I got done with his class, I felt like I knew Paul personally. And it was because he knew Paul, because he had studied God's word and Paul's literature so much and so well. It was like a fire hose for me, just drinking from it, and I was enthralled with it. So Galatians is as a special place in my heart for that reason, not necessarily because of the theology of the book, although it's glorious, just because it was important in my own personal Christian growth and development and even thinking about how to study God's word. So who's the author? Well, the author is Paul, the Pauline authorship of Galatians. There's the fancy scholarly term, phrase, I should say. The Pauline authorship of Galatians is widely accepted even among critical scholars. Twice Paul identifies himself in this book as being the writer. Paul likely used, you see the bottom of that first paragraph, number one there, Paul likely used an amanuensis. Does anybody remember? We talked about what that term meant a few weeks ago when we gave introduction to the epistles. Anybody remember what an amanuensis is? You read.
A scribe.
We almost might think of it as a professional scribe, or professional writer. You didn't have a lot of paper to practice on, so people would be trained in this art. Paul likely used one of those to write this. The reason we know that is if you go to the end of Galatians 6 and verse 11, Paul says this. It's kind of interesting. Galatians 6 and verse 11. He says this, "See with what large letters I have written to you with my own hand." Now, you say, how does this prove that there's probably a scribe here? Well, he wouldn't have emphasized the large letters unless they were in contrast to what was just previously written. So this was probably Paul adding his personal touch at the end of the letter. So he would have dictated the letter and then at the end wrote some personal notes, but he wasn't a trained scribe. Couldn't write in the neat professional script, and so his lettering would have looked different. More than likely, that's the case. So there's Paul in the authorship of this book. How about the dates of this book? There are a number of proposed dates if you look in commentaries and Bible teachers, ranging from 48 AD to about 57 AD, depending on whether the recipients were in North or South Galatia. And what do we mean by all of that? Here's a map of Galatia, as it's commonly known in the time of Paul. If you go up, see where you've got Troas up there, a little further up that direction, up through the Aegean Sea, there's that little river that runs from between Thrace and Bithynia. That's where Istanbul is, Constantinople. So that's where that is there. Galatia is further to the east of that area. And there are two ways of understanding Galatia during Paul's time period. One is Galatia was an actual official Roman province. The other is the Galatians stem from the Gaul people, where we get Galatia from, and they actually historically, going back to like 300 BC, occupied a very wide area in this whole region. Here's another map. This actually comes from Wikipedia. It's a really helpful map. You can see the Roman province of Galatia is located in the center of that map. But historically, the Gaul people overtook not only that province, but further west or further east and further up into the north. So the question is, when Paul writes to the Galatians, is he writing to churches that are in that Roman province, or is he writing to the people historically known as the Gauls, the Galatian people? So there's a debate about that. And depending upon who you think he wrote to will influence when the book was written, because we know that Paul was in the southern part of Galatia. He was in that southern part in the early part of his ministry, in his first ministry or first missionary journey. Later, we actually don't have a record in the New Testament of Paul going to the northern regions of Galatia, into that traditional Gaul people group. But we do know that very early on in church history that the gospel went to that region. It's entirely possible that Paul later went there. We don't know. That's not recorded. So who is it that Paul is writing to will influence how you would date the book. And that's what we go on to say here in the rest of our notes under the date section. If the recipients were the churches of northern Galatia, the church would have been founded on Paul's second missionary journey, and Galatians would then probably be written on his third missionary journey sometime between AD 53 and 57. If it was written to the churches in South Galatia, but after the Jerusalem Council, then the book was probably written on Paul's second missionary journey from Corinth, probably sometime around AD 52. But if the book was written before the Jerusalem Council, then a date of 48 or 49 is likely. And this actually is important when you study the book, because it will influence how you interpret chapters 1 and 2 of Galatians. It's not an incidental question. I'm going to suggest, along with I think most conservative Bible teachers today, although there are some who would be conservative who would disagree, but most would say that the likely date is 48 or 49. This makes Galatians, if this is the case, one of the first New Testament books written. One of the earliest New Testament books written. This is written before any of the Gospels are written. The only other book that would rival its date would be the book of James. So this is one of the first New Testament books written, if this is the case. The reasons for that are several. One is, as we'll see below in just a few moments, the churches were almost assuredly in South Galatia. I think there's very good internal evidence for that in the book itself and comparing it with the book of Acts. Second, there's no mention of the Jerusalem Council, which is mentioned in Acts 15, and I misspelled council there. So there's no mention of the New Jerusalem Council, which is mentioned in Acts 15. This would have occurred, this is pretty easy to date for a variety of reasons, the Jerusalem Council would have occurred in AD 49. And when you look in the book of Galatians, it would seem odd for Paul not to mention it since it directly dealt with some of the questions the Galatian Christians were facing. Y'all remember the Jerusalem Council? You've got these Judaizing teachers that are causing problems as the gospel is getting spread outside of Jerusalem. The Jerusalem church gathers together with the apostles. They consider the matter at hand. What do we do with these Gentile converts? Do we make them obey the law? Do we enforce the law to them in any way? And they have a meeting and they have some declarations that they give about their own church and they give recommendations to other churches. It's commonly called the Jerusalem Council. I think it's probably better stated as the Jerusalem Business Meeting. This was a members meeting that they decided to, what they're going to do as a church in response to a question that addressed them. And one of the questions, some of the questions that were addressed in that Jerusalem meeting fit very well with the kinds of questions that the Galatian Christians were asking. And so it would seem very strange if Galatians was written after the Jerusalem Council, because Paul makes no reference to it. He could have easily said, don't you know even the Jewish Christians, this is what they're teaching in Jerusalem? He doesn't do that. So that suggests that this was written probably before the Jerusalem meeting, the Jerusalem Council. Also, it seems that the Galatians' actions were soon after their conversion. I'll note for you Galatians 1 and verse 6. Galatians 1 and verse 6. Paul says, I marvel that you are turning away so soon from him who called you in the grace of Christ to a different gospel. This indicates that whatever happened in the Galatian church that caused Paul to write this letter happened very quickly after these people were converted.
So to clarify, this is a group of churches in Galatia, not just one.
Yes, the question is a group of churches in Galatia, not just one. Yes, this makes this a little bit different than some of the other letters that Paul writes. If you look in Galatians 1 and verse 2, he identifies himself as the author, Paul, in verse 1, verse 2. And all the brethren who are with me to the churches, plural, of Galatia. Okay. This, by the way, is one of the strong arguments, is that you have places like this in the New Testament for local church identity. There was distinguishable local bodies of believers, and each one of them was distinct from the other. When we get to Ephesians, there is this emphasis in some of the book on the whole of the church, but you also have in the New Testament very clear, in fact, the majority of references to churches in the New Testament are to individual local assemblies. It's a good question. So that's very different than when we read Ephesians or well, Colossians is interesting too, because at the end of Colossians, Paul says, make sure, I think, doesn't he say, make sure the church in Laodicea reads this letter as well? So even there you have a distinction between local assemblies. So probably 48, 49 AD, it's one of the first books that Paul writes, first one of the first New Testament letters, New Testament books written. You see this a little bit too when you think about, if you compare Galatians to Romans, many people have talked about how Galatians is like a companion commentary to Romans. There's many themes that cross over between the two. But you can also say that Romans is a further development of Paul's theology. You will hear people talk about that, and that should not scare you per se, right? There were a lot of questions that the early church was faced, and Paul answered them more and more over time. Romans reflects a little bit more of those kinds of questions being answered and a clearer and fuller declaration in written form of the gospel message. So Galatians helps us to see the trajectory of where the New Testament church, its teachings were going early in that process. Oh, let's see here. Nope, apparently I didn't put this up earlier. Sorry. Did I put this up earlier? I must have this slide duplicated. All right. Theme and purpose. Christians need to guard the gospel message of faith apart from the works of the Mosaic law. There were apparently some serious errors being propagated in the Galatian church. If you've got your Bibles open, you can look again. Galatians 1, verses 6 through 9. Paul says, I marvel, I'm amazed, I'm shocked. I just can't believe this is happening. It's the idea of that word. I marvel that you are turning away so soon from him who called you in the grace of Christ. Him has got to be God. Who called you in the grace of Christ to a different gospel, which is not another. That is to say, it's not another of the same kind. It's a different one totally. But there are some who trouble you and want to pervert the gospel of Christ. But even if we or an angel from heaven preach any other gospel to you than that which we have preached, let him be accursed. As we have said before, so now I say again, if anyone preaches any other gospel to you than what you have received, let him be accursed. This is one of the strongest introductions to any of the New Testament books out there. Paul was very concerned about the error that the Galatian churches had swallowed. Somehow this error had to do with mixing the gospel with the works of the law. And specifically, there are two problems that the Galatians had. The first was that these churches had, in some cases, had believed that somehow it was necessary to embrace at least some of the Old Testament works of the law to complete their salvation. That becomes evident as you read through the book of Galatians. So you've got the works of the law, you've got salvation. You need a few of these works to make salvation fully go. On the other hand, there was also the idea that you needed the works of the law to move you forward in sanctification. That by doing these things, that is what would make you righteous before God. And both of those things Paul argues against strongly in this letter. So that was a very great, great concern for Paul, because if they had embraced that, the gospel message goes away. What about the historical background? Well, as I mentioned, I've mentioned this already, so we'll just get this down on paper. The term Galatia could be used to designate an ethnic region in North Central Asia Minor, or the Roman province of Galatia, which would include the churches Paul founded on his first missionary journey. It does make sense that Paul is using the term in the latter sense, that is in the southern Galatian Roman province churches. Some of these things I've already touched on. You have the early date of the Jerusalem Council. The book of Acts, you see the middle of letter B, the book of Acts and the problem of the Gentile circumcision in the book of Galatians indicates that there were a large number of Gentile converts in these churches. However, since the recipients were acquainted with the Old Testament, these believers were likely associated with Judaism. And even when you look at the issues that the churches in Galatia were facing, it makes sense when you look further at the book of Acts. So I note here, letter C, that Paul founded the churches of Galatia on his first missionary journey. You can read about that in Acts 13 and 14. So when Paul left this region, apparently these Judaistic teachers came and influenced the Galatian churches. And you see evidence of this even when Paul was planting and establishing these churches. So go with me to Acts 13 for a moment, and we'll see some evidences of this. This is all in this Roman province region of Galatia, where Paul first went on his first missionary journey, he and Barnabas. And we see the problems that the Jewish people were causing for Paul. Paul made it his habit. He would go to the synagogue first, preach the gospel there. Some would believe. And eventually he would shift his ministry towards the Gentiles because he would get tossed out of the synagogue in most places. But we read this in Acts 13 and verse 44. This is Antioch and Pisidia. And it says this, verse 44, "On the next Sabbath, almost the whole city came together to hear the word of God. But when the Jews saw the multitudes, they were filled with envy and contradicting, blaspheming. They opposed the things spoken by Paul." So you have right away Jewish opposition to Paul's ministry. And if you go down to verses 48 through 50, after Paul gives some of his defense, we have this statement about Antioch and Pisidia. And again, this is in this region of Galatia. "Now when the Gentiles heard this, they were glad and glorified the word of the Lord, and as many as had been appointed to eternal life believed, and the word of the Lord was being spread throughout the region. But the Jews stirred up the devout and prominent women and the chief men of the city, raised up persecution against Paul and Barnabas, and expelled them from their region. But they shook off the dust of their feet from them and came to Iconium," which is also a region, also a city in the province of Galatia. So you have, again, right there at one of his first cities he goes to, this Jewish opposition that happens would make sense that this is going to breed problems later on in the Galatian churches. When he gets to Iconium, you have a similar thing going on. Look at chapter 14, verses 1 through 5. "Now it happened in Iconium that they went together to the synagogue of the Jews and so spoke that a great multitude of the Jews and the Greeks believed. But the unbelieving Jews stirred up the Gentiles and poisoned their minds against the brethren. Therefore they stayed there a long time speaking boldly in the Lord, who was bearing witness to the word of his grace, granting signs and wonders to be done by their hands." By the way, if you read, I think it's Galatians 4, Paul specifically addresses his signs and wonders that he does, which would indicate a tie-in here. "But," verse 4, "the multitude of the city was divided, part sided with the Jews and part with the apostles. And when a violent attempt was made by both the Gentiles and Jews with their rulers to abuse and stone them, they became aware of it and fled to Lystra and Derbe, cities of Lyconium, and to the surrounding region. And there they were preaching the gospel there." And Lystra and Derbe are also cities in this Galatian province. And then one more, when Paul is in Lystra, you read down in verse number 9 in Acts 14 these words. "This man, having heard Paul speaking, Paul observing him intently," that's not my right verse. Let me see where this is at. It should be verse 19. I had it wrong in my notes. Verse 19. "Then the Jews from Antioch and Iconium came there," so they come to Lystra, "and having persuaded the multitudes, they stoned Paul and dragged him out of the city, supposing him to be dead." So you have this strong division among Jews, Gentiles, and this is going to create lots of problems that the early Christians there in Galatia are going to have to deal with, which would seem to indicate why Galatians eventually had to be written. Now just a little bit more by way of historical background. Sometime later, writing the book of Galatians. Sometimes later, Paul participated in the Jerusalem Council. After a time, Paul set out on his second missionary journey, which began by revisiting the churches in southern Galatia. You can read about that in Acts 16. Galatians, therefore, was probably written from Antioch of Syria between Paul's first and second journeys. And this was kind of Paul's home base for a while. Here's a map, that same map. If you look down on the far right side, far right corner, there's Syria, and you have Antioch there. That's probably where Paul wrote the book of Galatians from. It was his base of operations for a short time, coming back from his second missionary journey. So he saw stuff that was going on in those Galatian churches, greatly concerned, probably heard reports, and felt like things needed to be addressed. What kind of literature is Galatians? Galatians conforms to the form of an ancient letter, an epistle. And he writes with passion and conviction to these Christians because he's greatly concerned about them. How about theology? What are some unique contributions that the book of Galatians gives theologically? One area, it becomes very apparent if you just read through Galatians at all, is that Paul focuses on the doctrine of justification. And you see that a number of times throughout the book, and I've got some of those references listed there. You can look them up on your own time. Justification, of course, is the idea that we are declared righteous, not by works of ourselves or by the law, but rather by faith alone. Salvation, of course, is not earned. It is a free gift of God. So there's one key theme, and if you were studying through the book of Galatians, we would harp on that a lot. It's glorious in Paul's explanation of it. Now, related theological emphases is that of Christian freedom. Galatians 5 and verse 16, you have a fairly well-known verse. Galatians 5:16, I say then, walk in the Spirit, and you shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. This is kind of the capstone of Paul's argument throughout the book. The practical application stuff really begins in chapter 5, where Paul says, stand fast in the liberty wherewith Christ has made you free. You're not constrained by the Old Testament law. Being justified is through faith. The believer is not enslaved to the Old Testament law. However, this is very important in the development of Galatians. Paul points out that the believer does not live without ethical or moral constraints. Rather, the believer is under what Paul calls the law of Christ, the law of Christ. You see that in chapter 6 and verses 1 and following. Brethren, if a man is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and that's a command there. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. The law of Christ. When we talk about the law of Christ is not equating to the Old Testament Mosaic Code. It is distinct from it. And maybe sometime I'll do a whole teaching session on that to show the distinctions in it, but it is not one and the same. Not one and the same.
Could be said to wrap up the law of Christ would be basically his teachings?
Yeah, the law of Christ is the will of Christ in the commands that Christ and his apostles have given in the New Testament. That would be the short answer. It sometimes includes Old Testament laws as Paul and the apostles would teach them. But the law of Christ is distinct.
Because there were places where Christ hiked the law.
Yes.
So it had been his interpretation of the Mosaic Code.
Yeah. I've got a whole section on that, but I don't have time this morning. We'll just do that for someone who's got a one-off Sunday school time or something like that. I'll do a whole session on that. I think it's worth thinking through. What are some key issues in the book of Galatians? There is a question about the correlation of the chronologies, that's the timeline, of Acts and Galatians. And you can see a little bit of that debate there under letter A. So there's some questions about that. How does those line up? But there's some explanation given. You'll have to look through all of the various times Paul visits Jerusalem and try to fit that in with what Paul says in Galatians chapters 1 and 2. Another key issue that is one of debate is that of the false teachers. Who are they? Because the false teachers are alluded to throughout the book, but they're nowhere in the book fully described. So you have to do some work to try to read into what's going on that caused Paul to write this letter. And based on that kind of reading, seems the false teachers come from outside the church itself. They professed to be Christians. They were of Jewish ethnicity, preached a message in conflict of that of Paul, and sought to discredit Paul in his ministry. And often, because of that, you will hear the term Judaizer frequently used in relationship to the Galatian churches. So they have the zeal for the Judeo law, the Mosaic law. And then lastly, the structure there, you can see it's a pretty simple structure. The body of the letter can be broken down into three sections, chapters 1 and 2, chapters 3 and 4, and chapters 5 and 6. And that is actually a really good division for the book as a whole. And as you study through that, you'll see those divisions come out pretty clearly. Questions about Galatians? Questions about Galatians? Yeah.
Is it possible that this could be almost immediately following the Jerusalem Council, where, in other words, even the question that he asked at the very beginning when they're leaving the faith, maybe they've been in the faith for a period of time, but suddenly this thing comes in and they're already dealing with Jerusalem, already dealt with it, and he almost considers that to be almost just a known thing. It is interesting when he gets to 3:1, he says, "Who hath bewitched you?" This idea that they should be aware of, maybe by other by people or whatever. They should have been already aware of the Judaizer type thing. But he says, who would bewitch you? Almost like they already knew that this is a problem and they still were led astray.
So they definitely knew it was a problem. And there are a number of good people that would say that was written shortly after the Jerusalem Council. I don't have a problem with that view at all. I think, it seems odd why he didn't mention it. But there are a lot of good people that would argue that. And so I think in the notes I even referenced that. That's one of the options for dating. One of the difficulties comes is you have to ask when he wrote it at that point. It pushes it back a little later. But that, if you take that view, it really doesn't, well, there are secondary problems with the chronologies that you have to try to fit in Paul's visits to Jerusalem in chapters 1 and 2. As to how that fits in, because he references very specifically his visits to Jerusalem, which would require both a longer discussion and me to look up to remember how those all fit in. So I don't know that I'm capable right now to do that at this point. So
one way or the other, it's interesting. I don't think when he says, who would bewitch you, I don't think that's a rhetorical question. I think he's genuinely really wants to know and is puzzled as to who is bringing this false doctrine.
Could be. Yes, back here.
So we have all these New Testament books that are written by Paul. Paul wrote this. So all these other disciples that are witnessing to the Jews, how do you think they address the Jews in pertaining to salvation and what they should do to the law? Because I don't see anything in the New Testament that says, and the disciples said, you should not keep these feasts. You should not recognize these things. Like, Christ never forbids people to keep the law. So how do you think they address them? Because obviously it was probably a conscious thing too.
Absolutely. So if you read in, a couple of things. First of all, in Acts 15, this question is addressed. Because they're debating how the Jewish people, Jewish believers, make that distinction, the Jewish believers should respond to Gentile converts. So there is some teaching that goes on there. Second, no, I agree with you that they did not forbid them for participating in the feasts and things of that nature. The key is that those things were not imported into the New Testament church as essential for church life. And you see that even in Galatians 1 and 2, where Paul, remember you have that account where Paul is in Antioch, and Peter and some of the other Jewish fellows come up, and they're going to meet with Peter or meet with the Christians in Antioch. And when these other Jews come along, Peter removes himself from the Gentiles. He won't eat with them. He won't, you've got a divided church body, literally. You know, here's the Jews on this side, the Gentiles on that side. So what that indicates when Paul rebukes Peter is that these kind of distinctions should not be brought into the New Testament church. And then third, over time, just as a matter of function, essentially the Jewish identity of born-again Jewish Christians, that shrinks and shrinks and shrinks to almost a non-existent minority among New Testament Christians. And that still holds true today. There are very few Jewish people that have really embraced Christ as the Messiah. So functionally, it becomes less and less of a question over time because the Jewish people, they're not coming to Christ. Their hearts are hardened. So that's kind of a short answer. I don't know if I'm answering your question directly.
Yeah, that kind of, it's just interesting how they don't really, I mean, it's the ushering of the church, you know, but they don't really spend any time on Jewish converts, per se.
Yeah, partly because there hardly were any, you know. Even if you look in Acts 13 and 14 in these churches, I think it's the first one, it's Iconium, where he goes in and, you know, it says many of the Jews and the Gentiles in the synagogue, so that some of these were proselytes, believe what Paul says. Shortly after, they're tossed out of the synagogue, and it's the Gentiles who start getting saved in the rest of the city. It's not the Jews anymore. So that just creates, you know, but one of the big problems the early church is facing with, and it's still a debate today, is we still have this Old Testament revelation. How does that apply to us today? So even if you didn't have Jewish converts, the questions still come up. How do we reconcile those two? I saw, I think behind you, maybe. Sorry, did you raise your hand, Matt?
Earlier on, but it was just...
Sorry, I'm just trying to go in order.
Yeah, no. I can't remember off the top of my head what it was.
That's all right.
I think my head kind of touched that.
So. Okay. What's interesting is that if people have practiced the feast and those sort of things for remembrance sake only, in fact, looking to the Old Testament and how it pointed to Christ, see, it's not the abolishment of the thing in the Old, it's that this is the fruition. And now things have changed, and we're not bound by the law. I don't think that there would have been, that's what they did now, or that's what they did then. Stop remembering, don't think about anything like that. It's that Christ is the fulfillment of those things. So you don't want to create the us and them. You want to say, this is Christ, this is the way, this is what it was all talking about, you know. And so I think maybe there was a care not to try to abolish the Old Testament. So maybe that's why you don't see teaching that people are weird. Pretty soon be like, you can't do that anymore. You can't think about that. You can't do the old feasts. You can't remember the old things. You can't remember the what do you call it? Sign the doorpost and
Passover.
Thank you. You can't remember that. Actually, we should remember that. And if we have a feast on that day and what it did in exalting Christ, so you don't want to abolish the old in the sense that you don't remember it for what it can instruct about. But if you said on that day, well, now the Jews are only allowed over here, now we're into a different, you know, a different realm.
Or said, I think in the case of Galatians, said that you have to do this feast. Exactly. That's the key. That somehow that's essential to either your sanctification or your salvation. All right, I got to be done. We'll get to Ephesians next week, and I'm actually only going to touch very briefly on that book, mostly because Pastor Greg is doing an excellent job teaching through it. And so we'll go through that and get on to Philippians and Colossians next week. Thank you so much. You're dismissed.